by KPFT Houston. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to another edition of Technology Bites.
No one will know any difference.
That was digital snow. We are on the forefront of a new ice age.
Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
One of the few times it almost goes without a hitch, and we're not actually broadcasting.
I had everything I actually said, like, wow, this is going to go perfectly.
Yeah. So chances are, if you're tuned in right now, you can't hear us because the transmitter is down for repairs.
You're streamed in, not tuned in.
Yeah. So dial up the MP3 or the MPEG audio thingamabob and listen.
So now we're like the... We're like that can of Alpo, or whatever it was, dog food, and whatever that cartoon was that I saw as a child, but I don't remember anymore. And one of the things was like the person who wanted to do something had to like find the last dog holding the last can of dog food because it was a self-referential can where it's a can with a picture of a dog holding a can, the dog holding a can. And so then in the cartoon, like... He's, like, looking at it, and it's flying. They're flying by, and I really don't remember what show that was, but anyway, all that to say, it's sort of like, this is this show within a show without being IRC.
I think it's just a little bit more intimate. I think we're
intimate.
A smaller audience. They're clustered
around.
Oh, put
your clothes back on.
That's right. They're clustered around their internets, and they're listening to us, you know?
So we should play FCC Roulette. Assuming that we're not broadcasting over the airwaves, we could do
it. Are we broadcasting in... What about the Huntsville?
Last time I asked about that, and they said that they are still broadcasting on the sister frequencies or whatever, the satellite radio stations.
So we cannot play FCC with that.
Hmm.
But we can still hear the edges of the BBC.
That's good.
So Huntsville and Goodrich Livingston, this is your chance.
If you got a computer problem.
If you got a computer problem.
But blink everybody else.
Beep. All right. Hmm. So those few of you who are tuned in, check us out online at geekradio.com. And chances are you already know about the IRC, but go ahead and hang out on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. We're in channel Tech Bytes. If you don't have your own IRC client, you can join up using the IRC thing on our website, the Java application on our website. I went ahead and posted a flyer or an ad for the Geek Gathering that will be happening a week from Friday, but I won't be there. And I'm not sure what's going on with the coffee grounds, but I heard that they might be changing names or format or owners or something.
So we'll go in there and it'll be like a retro clothing store?
As long as they don't change locations or formats, we'll be okay.
They're going disco, I've heard.
Mm.
I'm making that up. I wouldn't know. You're a lot closer to there than I am.
But your speculation's so much more interesting than our speculation.
I could be okay with that.
Could you?
Yeah.
You know, your big old disco ball in there?
I was too young to, participate in disco. I think it was kind of cool. I like disco music.
Well, you know, I think
I had the radio station that I liked to listen to in San Antonio went disco, and it was pathetic.
I think disco in Texas was pretty wretched. I think if you could have experienced disco as an adult cocaine user at Studio 54, it might have been a different thing altogether. Just saying, that would have been.
Well, see, I'm mostly just talking about the music because, I mean, on it, you know, disco is like the like pervy grandfather of a lot of the music I listen to.
But do you like disco in an ironic way then?
No, I really like disco.
Really like it?
No, it's good. I mean, I'm not going to say 100% of it, but there is a lot of disco that I like.
Hipster disco.
There's a new disco movement. It's spelled N-U and has a hyphen that's going on in Houston right now. And I think all over.
Well, I was driving through town and I heard this radio station. It was all...
That's disco!
Well, you know, between light rock and disco, growing up in the 70s, I recall, the only thing I really recall is how much I hated all of it. And every time it came on the radio, I turned it off or changed to something else. Just would find whatever else to listen to. And yet, somehow, most of the top 40 from those two genres, I know all the words to when I hear the songs.
So. Well, I'm the same way about 70s rock and like 80s hair metal bands. I hate 70s rock. Sorry, everybody who loves 70s rock, but I hate it. I don't like 60s rock either.
All 70s rock?
Pretty much all 70s rock.
And all 60s
And pretty
rock?
Much all 60s rock.
So like no like Beatles? It.
No Led Zeppelin.
No Led Zeppelin.
No Led Zeppelin.
No Black Sabbath.
No Black Sabbath.
No Doors.
No, definitely not the Doors. I hate the Doors more than most.
Uh-huh. You would you would be good. At the Continental Club, they have a no Doors policy. and Pete, the manager of the Continental Club, he enforces. He hates the Doors.
Nice.
And they've had they've had open mics and talent shows and gong shows and if any band ever, you know, does a cover of a Doors song, they will get shut down and escorted out.
So is there a sign like not Wayne World?
Stairway to Heaven.
No Stairway to Heaven.
No, it's not publicized. It's just that if you're unlucky enough to be in a band that happens to cover a Doors tune, and Pete hears it happen, you're done.
What about the Big Top?
Anything having to do with that complex, wow. I'm sure it applies.
I like Pete more than I did before. And I already liked him a fair bit, but
yeah,
I like him more now.
Nobody has got the full story on why that is exactly, but what is that? I think
that's the BBC. Yeah. Somebody screaming on the BBC.
Things aren't going well in Darfur. If I'm hearing this correctly.
This just in. All right, so we're going to be doing our best to present a show that is based on call-ins from people who listen to us on the radio. So you figure it out how that's going to go.
Listen to us on the internets.
If you're not... Well, hopefully there'll be some people tuned in on the stream.
I pushed out the Twitter the phone number, so, you know, I'm sure people
can use that'll
Twitter.
Be great.
They can also they can just blind call.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you guys keep it down. I'm
calls.
Trying to get my news.
Are you shushing them?
Shh. Or is that the Sex Pistols? I think that may be the Sex Pistols.
Now, see, the Sex Pistols I like.
They're 60s rock, though, huh?
No.
They're not? What are they?
They're really late 70s, but they're not rock. They're punk.
Whoa.
And there's a difference.
That's true. I mean, rock is rock, but punk rock is not rock. It's
punk's
punk
not
rock.
Even metal, really. Now, I mean, sometimes it'll bleed over, but...
What about... So, no psychedelic.
Nope.
No art rock, no Genesis or Yes or any of that stuff.
No Hendrix?
I kind of liked Yes a little bit when I was young. But I didn't know any better.
What about Rush?
No Rush.
Not like Rush. Even though, you know, I'm a drummer and Neil Peart's awesome.
You're a what?
Drummer.
Are you?
Yes.
I've never seen you drum.
What? I had a drum in here one time and I drummed. You don't remember that? I'm a percussionist because
who's
I never
your
actually
drummer?
I actually never learned to play trap. My favorite drummer, Sandy Nelson. Sandy Nelson. he was a really popular drummer in like the 50s or 60s. He did a lot of solo albums of drum music. He did Wipeout and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, he did Wipeout?
I don't know if he is the original one that did Wipeout, but he did a version of Wipeout. Vic Firth is also really nice. Of course, his name's on drumsticks, so it's easy to say. But he did a lot of booklets about examples of, you know, how to do like practicing for drums and different patterns and stuff like that. He's kind of really old school though. So yeah, no psychedelic, no. I don't know. I never went back a whole lot. I've gone back into country. Like I like really old country, like 30s, 40s, 50s country. I hate folk music.
I'm surprised you get along so well.
Man, I was driving through town in my VW bus, and suddenly I felt unwelcome.
Well,
I don't know why.
I think it's because, you know, my musical enlightenment happened really with Devo. And then with the Talking Heads and the Eurythmics. And so it was really like kind of like new wave, and I got into punk sort of, and I got into industrial. And so
I understand that, but I mean, for me with punk and, you know, Devo was a life-changing moment, 1977, seeing him on Saturday Night Live doing Satisfaction.
See, I saw him on Fridays.
But the thing was that in context, but see, punk rock had a context for me because I grew up listening to all the stuff.
No, see, I grew up in a really small town.
Yeah.
I had no exposure to anything except what I saw on TV.
Because seeing Devo do that to a Rolling Stones song and not even trying to be true to the song, that was rock and roll blasphemy.
I didn't even know the original song.
Well, it's a good version of it, but having it in context with how brave that was for them to do that, I think. But I mean, it's okay if you don't like classic rock, but you like disco. So what does that tell us? So, you know, I'm going to reach back into the 70s bag of musical tricks and pull out the one thing I love, and it's a disco.
Well, because I like electronic music a lot, and so there's a lot of electronics.
A lot of electronica has its roots.
And most electronics.
Well, like you said, the pervy grandparents. Too.
Well, I mean, all the a lot of the tones and sounds. I mean. A lot of the there's a retro movement in electronic music to go back to old electronics, and so, you know, a lot of the sounds of disco even show up in modern electronic music. I mean, but it's dance music and it's electronic, so I mean, a lot of the modern music is based on disco at some point, with a huge injection of Kraftwerk, which I also love a great deal.
We just did a several night stand at MoMA.
So mad about that.
Well,
I've still never seen them live.
Well, hopefully they'll play at DEF CON.
Yeah, I keep hoping.
I haven't heard any new rumors.
The Crystal Method's playing.
Crystal Method's going to be there, so they may not push for Kraftwerk anymore.
The Crystal Method, they're not all that good to me. I don't like them that much.
Maybe they got some new stuff.
Maybe they're dubstep now.
Wait for the drop.
Maybe they're bro step now.
Bro step.
There's a bro step.
So there was apparently, it already happened, the Brony meetup.
Group yeah, it was supposed to happen Saturday,
this.
Right?
I wasn't. Whoa, did you go, dude?
It was supposed to happen on Saturday, and honestly, I really did at one point think about going up there incognito just to, like, sit in another booth and watch.
When you say incognito, were you going to be in a Brony outfit? Or
No. Like, I mean, I would be not, so they wouldn't know I was observing them just to, like, see who was there and what they did.
Coat,
yeah,
no
you know,
socks.
A fedora, some shades.
Rainbow necklace.
Ray-Bans.
Looked like the Linux guy, red hat.
But you didn't.
But I didn't.
I was hoping somebody would go.
No windows.
It's not too late. I think it's all the My Little Pony, the new one, the Friendship is Magic. It's available for free streaming on Netflix, if you have a Netflix streaming account.
I was just wondering how many people would be there. I mean, is this like...
What
kind
of representation
three
we have?
Here? I mean, you know, how many people...
It was early in the morning, so I guess they
was
probably...
Was it 11, I think.
Did they bring their kids, or...
It's probably, like, two guys with ponies, and then, like, 40 other people kind of, like, slowly circling to see what's up.
No, man, I'm
40 here. Incognito guys.
Yeah, 40 incognito guys.
I'm here for the ponytail meeting. Oh, you're... Okay. Yeah, I am, too.
All right, so...
200 feds playing...
I would have gone. I was SRO. Where is that's over on Westheimer, out by the Beltway, isn't it?
No, it's. I looked it up. It's 290 outside of 610.
Never mind. I wouldn't have gone.
Too far.
Well, I mean, if it was SRO, I remember was like at Gessner and Westheimer or something like that. Was it that?
It's out there, and there's one around Willowbrook Mall, like around that area too.
I don't know. When I looked it up, it was.
Yeah, there might be more than
outside
one.
Of 610.
There might be more than one SRO where they move.
Wouldn't that be embarrassing if you got all dressed up in your Brony outfit and you went to the wrong SRO?
Hey, everybody! Oh, there's nay going to be a Brony meetup here. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to have to really stretch this out for a couple hours if we don't get any calls, but... Let's go ahead and go to Technology Bites News Center in San Antonio, do the Technology Bites Info Shot with Peter Hughes.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, well, this one's a good one. This is one of those good news, might not be good news stories. Sprint's iPhone using subscribers will continue to have access to unlimited data services for the foreseeable future, according to CEO of the company, Dan Hess. And that will include unlimited 4G LTE service, assuming the next iPhone is indeed compatible with it. With that, the high-speed wireless standard. Sprint got its first crack at iPhone customers in October of 2011 with the iPhone 4S, and they've pushed pretty hard. They made a reported $15.5 billion bet on the popular smartphone, agreeing to sell millions of the phones up front in order to launch the device on its network. For Sprint, though, the iPhone customers are more profitable than the other platfors, despite the high subsidy they've had to put on the device itself. And apparently with the with true unlimited data and the potential for the LTE, they are taking customers away from other networks. So I guess there's that one to hope for. So maybe if the next generation iPhone, if it's a LTE, maybe some of you out there listening will be considering going to Sprint. Next up, Google Drive got announced, and one thing that causes some problems is the apparently their policy documents about their privacy policy for your storing all your stuff, gigs of your stuff on Google Drive is written very badly and it's written so poorly that it's confusing. Obviously, private files winding up on Google Drive are not as privacy protected as the ones on your personal hard disk. The fact is Google is not granting itself free rein to use your personal data, but you would be really hard-pressed to know that given a, quote, toxic brew of conflicting claims you can find in the company's privacy policy, according to a legal expert who has closely reviewed the Google policies. The language is not drafted nearly as tightly as we would expect from a company of Google's size and stature, says Eric Goldman of the High Tech Law Institute. He describes the covenants as poorly written and likely to confuse users by virtue of Google mashing together licensing and privacy statements. Google, they're clarifying thing, asked for comments, said, as our terms of service make clear, what belongs to you stays yours. You own your files and control their sharing, plain and simple. Our terms of service enable us to give you the services you want, so if you decide to share a document with someone or open it on a different device, you can. But apparently, if you read further around in the other areas, they can use your documents as like advertisements. Of course, they're still yours. So, you know, they're just, it's kind of a, how do you, it just is a little vague. And according to this lawyer, it kind of has big question marks. Obviously, it may be that this kind of problem exists for all the various cloud-based storages, but it's not an auspicious start for the long discussed and awaited, Google Drive. Apparently, Dropbox, after suffering through user backlash over policy similar to Google's, updated its terms with very clear limitations. It'll be interesting to see where that goes and see how Google reacts. Plus, I'm sure you can look up more about the sort of details about using Google Drive and comparing it to all the other cloud services that are out there and see which one fits you the best. And here's a tough one. There's a geek thing where numbers are important, you know, like it, some stuff not so much anymore, but like how big is your hard drive? You know, how many terabytes is your hard drive? Or it used to be megahertz were what was the megahertz on your processor? Those kinds of things, you know, the GPU on your computer. And so bigger numbers always were better. And newer things, newer approaches were always better. Apparently, The Hobbit is using, if this one that should maybe thrill the geek types, is being shot at 48 frames per second instead of the 24 frames per second that's been pretty much the standard in the movie industry since the first time anybody took a few pictures in a row and made motion with them. They showed a preview at CinemaCon, a 10-minute preview of The Hobbit, and there was a big uproar. Viewers complained that the movie looked too real, that it had the look of low-budget television. So the 48 frames per second thing, according to Peter Jackson, who decided to shoot The Hobbit at 48 frames per second, he said that the frame rate makes the 3D picture much more gentle on the eyes without the strobing or as much flicker and much less eye strain. The problem that Jackson seems to have overlooked is that decades of watching movies at 24 frames per second has made any changes in that paradigm extremely disorienting to people, especially given that higher frame rates are typically used for things like home video, soap operas, and reality TV. If you've ever watched TV on a set that has some kind of smooth motion feature enabled, you sort of know what this looks like. It's a subtle change, according to Engadget. But it makes a huge difference. Your favorite shows all of a sudden look like amateur productions. It's very unpleasant. With the decision to shoot at the higher frame rate, Jackson might be going one step too far in the name of 3D. People are already on the fence about 3D movies bastardizing the traditions of cinema, and they may not, if they're not liking the way it looks when they see 48 frames a second, there could be that could turn out nasty for the Hobbit. Now some good advice for you. You know, usually we're, you know, all for, hey, buy the new technology, right? I mean, we don't oversell it, I don't think, but we've talked about it a little bit per Apple products, but I want to take it a little bit farther. There's a list of things you should, if you're thinking about buying a laptop, any laptop, PC, Mac, whatever, anytime soon, you need to consider waiting a little bit until the Ivy Bridge processors come out. You know, like I said, we've mentioned it before, but mostly in context of Macs, but you really should be thinking about it even if you're looking to get a Windows laptop. The first few systems will be available April 29th, and they're not the ones that you would be interested in. The initial ones will be only the highest-end Core i7 quad-core type stuff, which is in your big, you know, the massive 17-inch desktop replacement rigs. For the more mainstream, dual-core i3 and Core i5 CPUs in most of the kind of midsize and mainstream laptops, you'll have to wait until the end of May or the beginning of June. Even then, if there's a specific model you're interested in, it may take even longer before the PC maker that does the one you're looking for to update it, if they do. So with Ivy Bridge right on the doorstep, if you can put off a purchase for the next 4 to 6 weeks, it's the point where you should strongly consider waiting for the updated processors, unless you're just stuck where you have to make a purchase now. While application performance and battery life will likely only see modest gains, the integrated graphics performance is much improved, which is pretty handy if you want to play games on the on a non-gaming machine or just have a good display. So, you know, the kinds of machines that we're talking about is like the Dell XPS 13, their Ultrabook, that's one to watch for. The MacBook Pro, the rumors about that coming, a new one coming, or new models coming with Ivy Bridge has been strong. The HP Folio 13, the Toshiba Portage R835, if you're that far into the models, it's a 13-inch, and it's a sub-$1,000 Ultrabook. That may be one that when Ivy Bridge comes out that you may be pretty happy with. And so you may save a few bucks, and you'll get sort of the latest and greatest in a way that'll probably last longer for you. So a little bit of free advice. And speaking of prices dropping, last year, slowdowns in the growth of the PC market led to a surplus of RAM and resulted in massive drops in prices for RAM in the following months. It made upgrades to higher density RAM chips much more feasible for many users, allowing them to do more without experiencing slowdowns and other problems when systems run low on memory. Even though RAM upgrades being cheaper has allowed many to increase the performance of their systems, the other major bottleneck is, of course, your hard drive. For instance, when compared to using the same benchmarks for throughput for application loading, SSDs perform on average over 10 times faster than a regular hard drive. The problem is they're expensive. Even with the lower costs, a 250 gig solid-state drive will cost about $280 on average, whereas a 250 gig conventional hard drive is $80. And it only gets worse if you need a bigger one. Recently, though, news suggests that the need for large SSD firms like Kingston, OCD, Crucial, and Intel are attempting to narrow the market and squeeze out the competition. For now, the price drops are they've brought some SSD hardware closer to the SATA 2 type version prices. Price drops are expected to continue as NAND flash chips become cheaper and more abundant, which should continue to spur reduced prices and make single drive, solid state drive solutions more feasible for people. You know, there was the dual drive stuff that had like a hard drive and a hard drive, solid state drive, hybrid thingy, whatever, which would use the hard drive for bulk storage and the solid state for speed. This is another thing for you to maybe wait, because it sounds like over the next few months, SSDs will be dropping. And if you want to like 3D make your own, well, plastic model of a of a solid state drive, not a real one. The big new kind of geek maker thing is a 3D printer, you know, that'll like create 3D models from nothing but your programming skill and prowess. One of the significant barriers to that one has always been, oh, the price. For its part, MakerBot has made some significant strides towards tearing down some of the barriers to 3D printers getting to more geeks. And now Solidoodle, led by that company's former COO Samuel Cervantes, is looking to take the trend even further. The company's current self-titled model, the Solidoodle, starts at just under $500. The printer, which is now up for pre-order, can print plastic pieces up to 6 inches by 6 inches by 6 inches, and all you need to supply is a computer and power. Also, interestingly, just because a 200-pound man can literally stand on top of the machine while it's printing. So if you have a need for a 3D printer and you have a 200-pound man who needs some place to stand, you're covered. So that's the news.
All right. I understand that we may be back on the air in 30 minutes or after the, in the second hour. There's some discussion that that might happen. Awesome. All
that
right.
Would be good.
What?
That would be good.
That would be good. Right now, if you want to be on the air with us and you're listening via the stream, you're welcome to call 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, to be on the air with us. Dwight is heavily, deeply immersed in something on his computer.
I was just trying to think if I should do yet another tweet asking for pity calls, but
I don't want pity calls.
We don't need pity calls, especially from
pity calls from your Twitter followers. No,
I'll tell them that.
Jay has been despaired. What?
Maybe we can go around and we can talk about what kind of music the rest of y'all hate.
The rest of us hate.
Yeah.
Oh goodness.
Instead of me. I mean, I gave a pretty good list. I definitely was not exhaustive, but
I began my journalism career as a music critic, and I detested disco at the time. I'm less detestable of it. I like it a little more now.
What made you hate it?
Because I was the rock and roll generation, and it seemed simplistic and silly and trivial and
like it didn't take any talent.
And it didn't take any... Right. I mean, it's all those... I have never been much for country, but as I'm getting older, I'm, like, getting into more kinds of music, and I'm listening to it. I listen to it differently than I used to. I should be a music critic now rather than I didn't know anything in my 20s. But... And what's funny is having kids and they listen to all kinds of things and I try to listen to what they listen to, but it's a lot of what they listen to sounds so derivative of stuff I've heard before that I have a hard time. But every now and then I'll listen to something that they're doing that's really new and really good. So I try to listen to a lot of new music. But there isn't much that I don't like opera. How about that? I just can't.
I don't like opera
or show
either.
Tunes. I can't stand show tunes.
I generally don't like show tunes.
Yeah.
Either.
No opera. Yeah. Wow.
But there's not, and I'm a big folky. I love folk. Sorry, I love folk music. I'm like Donovan, you know. I'm like, I can listen to Donovan all day. But
Art Donovan?
No. Although his record kicks. So. You know, I kind of like don't have anything like I hate other than maybe opera.
Hmm. I'll stand with you on hating opera.
All right, okay.
I like classical. I just don't like operatic vocals.
The other thing I was kind of tied up with here is that I've been having this interesting Twitter exchange with Jason Snell, who's the top editor at Macworld. You know, I've been going back and forth about he's been hearing from a lot of normal people, as he says, that they expect any day now Macs to go away completely and Apple only to do iOS devices. Yeah, right. Well, that's kind of both of our reactions. And then we discussed the idea of eventually you could see like heavy lifting Macs going away. you know, as other...
Just being, like, very specialized, maybe?
Yeah, or being
like
very...
just the movie industry or just, you know, something along those lines, not available to the public?
No, well, probably always available to the public, but I think it would not be, you know, that their main focus. Apple's emphasis is going to...
Like, they would turn... Even their laptops would turn into iOS-style devices where you had applications and ran one thing at a time.
Well, I don't know if, you know... We didn't go down there, but what was interesting was everybody else chiming in. We had all these people kind of, you know, and so it's like started this kind of big discussion in general. And now he's like left me to deal with this mess.
Just said that conversation's over.
Right.
This chat room is closed.
I think it's maybe dinner time.
End of line.
Yeah, that's right. It's 6:30 on the West Coast, so
apparently it's real.
That has to be intentional. Totally intentional.
There's a high school, and I don't know exactly where it is. I'm still trying to figure it out, but it looks like, from an aerial view, it looks like the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, it does look like that. It's not intentional. Can't be intentional.
Has to be intentional.
It has to be intentional.
Where is it? Let me see.
Here.
It kind of looks like the Millennium Falcon.
Hold it up to the microphone so all the listeners at home can
see. It looks quite a bit like the Millennium Falcon.
It's even got the kind of offset one side because it's not completely symmetrical, and neither is the Falcon. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe they'll just say it's coincidental so they don't get their ass sued off by. It's the Parkland High School, and if you go to, I think you could probably go to maps.google.com. Let's see.
Does it say where it is?
That's what I'm trying to find out. It's still, because there's Parkland High School in a number of different places.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it was intentional.
Is their mascot the Rebels?
Oh, it's in Allentown. Yep, I just found it. It's pretty amazing.
Where they're shutting all the factories down.
Reports officials at the high school, they claim they didn't consciously plan the campus that way, but people are pretty sure they're just trying to lay low to avoid any imperial entanglements.
Yeah. Kind of looks like it's holding a lightsaber.
That access road, or is that one you had in Google Maps? Oh, that's awesome. So you can, like, you know, like put in like Google Maps the map view and
North Cedar Crest looks like a lightsaber.
I'm gonna share that on Google Plus.
So how do we know that on your Pinterest?
I have no idea how we would know that unless somebody
called in and said we can hear you now.
Yeah, right.
That's a from bottom view of the Millennium Falcon, right?
You know, that kind of looks like C-3PO's head too, if you squint right, tinge it gold in your mind.
No, that's from top. That's from top.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have the turret on the right-hand side.
Well, that would be... Yeah, I don't know. I got nothing.
Yeah. Pretty good, though.
So if you want to find this, what we're talking about, if you're listening, we're talking about the Parkland High School, North Cedar Crest Boulevard. If you Google map search Parkland High School in Allentown, Pennsylvania, you'll find it. And the aerial view, it looks... like the Millennium Falcon, or it kind of does. It's kind of interesting.
It's pretty neat.
It's nifty, man. It's kinda...
So there's a Wikipedia entry on this.
Oh, there is?
Yes.
Well, we got time to kill. Let's read
that. Well, that's obviously authoritative.
Don't read it yet. I'm not done editing.
All right. So what does it say?
Oh, well, it was built in the current building was built in 1999. So it's entirely possible that the architects
were influenced,
but I'm still scanning.
It was like,
could they say they were paying homage and then they wouldn't have to get in trouble? It's a derivative work.
Wouldn't it be cool if they're
satirical?
Didn't the Phantom Menace come out in episode 1? Come out in 1999?
Oh, I just found their high school mascot shirt, the Wookiees.
Probably what happened. They started it. They saw the movie and they're like, wrap it up. We're not going to do it.
School officials claim the design was not deliberate. Well,
there you go.
They can't come out on record and say that it was.
That's because they're Trekkies.
Oh, that would be cool. Build an opposing high school, like something like the Enterprise.
Or a Klingon bird of prey, actually, would be, that'd be better. Because it'd be hard to do the Enterprise, like, looking, you know. Klingon bird of prey.
The Enterprise would be very simple to do from the top. You'd have a round section of the campus.
And tube and two other tubes.
I like Klingon bird of prey would be actually more difficult.
I loved the Klingon bird of prey.
And the first Star Trek.
You just
Star
hope you
Trek.
Didn't have a class in one wing tip and your next class was in the other wing tip.
I like on the homepage of the Parkland High School, they've got the section for academic software at a lower price. Ching, right there on the front. Discounted software. Windows 7, CS5.
Yeah, we've been hearing that all night.
But it comes and goes. It's the Beeb.
Sounds like there's a football game going on.
For me, it's hard to tell the difference between the BBC and the Imperial Force in Star Wars. Because they've all got British accents.
All right, well, we have to keep in mind that there's, you know, we are being broadcast on the stream still, and this will still be picked up and played in California, so.
Right.
We apologize to anyone who is listening, obviously, as a call-in show, and our transmitter's not actually transmitting.
In
Houston. We're not getting the number of calls that we would normally get, not even by, you know, we're not getting any calls.
We're not getting any calls.
The only calls we're getting are asking is
the station off the air. Yeah. So that's obviously putting a damper on things. So we're using the internet to entertain ourselves and try to entertain.
So Barrett, what kind of music do you hate? See, because Barrett, you know, he doesn't show so strong emotion, and a lot of times he doesn't seem like he wants to make
disparaging
comments.
I don't necessarily hate stuff, but I'm really into, like, bebop, bit pop, emo rap, and cuddlecore.
What is cuddlecore?
I spent too much time on Wikipedia looking at genres of music. I don't know. I'm
I want to hear cuddlecore.
Cuddlecore.
What was it? Emo?
Emo rap.
Emo rap.
Bit pop I was already familiar with. So that's 8-bit kind of stuff.
He doesn't like that. He hates
bebop is
it.
The stuff
like
in the 40s.
Stuff,
no, I'm saying this is the stuff I like. I was joking around. These are things I'm going to
find out. Cuddlecore you like?
I think I might. We'll have to check it out. I've never heard it before. I guess these are genres
like,
I like.
Is that kind of like kettlecore? Like kettlecore?
Kettlecore.
I think it's some kind of octopus hentai porn or something.
Oh, it's, yeah, watch me just watch it be like some furry kind of dancey kind of stuff.
All right. So I was driving through town, and I listened to this show. It was all about hating music. We have to get Groovehouse in on this conversation. Trying to think what kind of music I hate, if there's any kind of music I hate. I mean, opera is one of the things, I don't hate opera. Opera is one of those things I wish that I liked it or understood it.
Opera's okay, but it's one of those things you need to kind of go see. It's like, you know, listening to like a sitcom without any of the picture. You know, it's not something you'd necessarily just go listen to. I know people do, but
I went to an opera. I went to see Madame Butterfly, and it was a very good production of it.
I'm cool with plays.
Yeah.
And I'm cool
with singing and
with
plays.
Classical music. And I'm cool with vocals, even like some a cappella stuff. But when you combine all that and you get opera, I don't like it. I should say, there's not that they're like, I hate.
Do you not like listening to opera? Would you watch an opera? Have you watched an opera?
Have I watched an opera? I don't know. I have watched people do like one operatic piece, but I don't know that I've watched a whole opera like with the whole from beginning to end.
I don't think it counts if it's in the Olive Garden.
All right, well, it looks like we got
the mall.
What about rock opera?
Rock opera?
Have you seen Jesus Christ Superstar?
Do you like Jesus Christ? That's 70s rock opera.
No.
Or 60s rock opera. What about, so no Tommy, no... Man, I remember when in the 70s, a friend of mine and I were writing a rock opera. The only thing that we lacked was any musical talent. We had a great story.
I've seen Jesus Christ Superstar performed once or twice.
Wow, more than once.
Yeah, but it wasn't like I was like, dude, I gotta go see this. You know, it was like some other people were going, and maybe I had a somebody, friend of a friend that was in it or something. So,
yeah.
Are we back on the
air? We got calls.
We got calls, so let's see what's going on here. You're like, yeah, Groovehouse has got some people in the queue for us, so hey, Groovehouse.
Yeah.
What do we got? What's going on?
All right. We got a few calls, and we've got some calls coming in, so if you're calling, just hang on, and I'm going to get to you in just a second.
All right, or hang up, or just give up, whatever right. you like.
But let's see. So first up on the show tonight, we're going to take Tim.
Tim, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Oh, good. I thought I was dropped. Hey, first off, why are you guys picking so much on that alternate web browser? I thought Opera was okay.
Oh, well, apparently we've been skipped.
How did all of us miss that? Not one of us drops an Opera reference.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
I was actually talking about both. I hate both.
Oh.
No, you're backpedaling now. We all missed that
that's
one.
That's revisionist hating.
All right, Tim. So besides, is that your one-hit wonder, or you got something for us?
Yeah, I do. Hey, this is a real small one. I recently upgraded my MacBook Pro to Lion, and I was a holdout. I was not prepared for all the changes, but the smallest and most annoying one is it no longer wakes up when I move the mouse, when it goes into suspend mode.
I actually really like that feature.
You do? The feature? Yeah. Okay.
I like it.
Then it doesn't wake up when you move the mouse?
Yeah.
Right. I have to hit an arrow key.
Is that on purpose?
I assume so. I assume they did it on purpose. I know it happens on mine that I've upgraded. Like my home computer, I've got a Bluetooth mouse. And it used to be if you move the mouse, the screen woke up.
What about if you click the mouse?
Click it still works.
If you click it still works, I think. It's just right. It used to be if you moved it, and now it's not if you moved it. But I actually like that.
Because if you accidentally bump the mouse.
Right.
Yeah.
That may be what it's for. I've got a magic trackpad, and if you move your finger on it, it won't wake up. But if you tap it, it does. So
but that is a change.
That is a change, but it actually makes sense.
But
I actually like it.
Can you change it, though?
I don't know if you
I'm
can
not seeing anyone that's got a solution so
no.
far.
So
I couldn't find it. Yeah, I looked around.
So, are you not okay with just tapping the mouse?
I actually didn't know the tap it would work. I've always been hitting an arrow key, so yeah, I'll tap it, I guess.
Yeah, just tap that mouse.
Is it a magic mouse?
Yeah, it's a magic mouse.
Yeah, just tap it.
One of the things that always brings my computer out of sleep mode is typing my password into a chat window or, you know, a tweet.
Yeah.
I'll just start. What? Yeah.
Okay. Hey, and just to get a quick recommendation from you all, this is a three-year-old MacBook Pro.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I tricked it out, but it just fell off its warranty, so I can do whatever I want to it. What would you do to make it, if you were to upgrade a piece of it? Would you double the memory or replace the hard drive?
How much memory does it have now?
It came with, I upgraded to the 4 gig, and I guess it can handle 8.
Yeah, I would do that, and you could also put in an SSD, although it's a little expensive, a solid-state hard drive. That's a little costly.
Yeah, that one of the things on the news, which you probably couldn't hear because we weren't broadcasting, but it's looking like there's going to be some price competition on SSDs, and the price should drop in the next few months.
Okay, so hang on to that, sure. Okay. All right, well, that's really all the questions I have for now. I mean, I got stacked, obviously, but I'll hold them for a different Wednesday night.
All right, thanks for your call tonight.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
Yeah, I went to 8 in this, and it's, of course, I use a lot of virtual machines, but it's really nice having 8 in this.
I've been really, really happy with Apple for years, but in the last 2, 4, maybe 6 months, my systems in general have become more unstable.
Dwight was complaining about that before the show.
Like, I've actually had them...
Some gray screens?
Numerous... I haven't had any kernel panics, really, or gray screens, but what I have is maybe memory exhaustion. So it might actually be a program or two that's doing this.
Yeah.
But from memory leaks or something, because it looks like it might be memory exhaustion, because what will happen is everything's running fine, and then one program will start to lock up, and the other ones will work. But as soon as that one starts to lock up and I get the beach ball on it, then eventually... Another one gets a beach ball when I'm using it, and then another one gets a beach ball.
Yeah, that sounds
and then
like
I can't
lock,
shut them down. I have to do a force quit on them. But even if I force quit everything down to Finder, the system's still jacked, and I have to reboot it.
Hey, man, have you checked for viruses?
I did check for the flashback virus, and it's not on your there. Mac.
Some numbers came out, and it's a lot more than you think. It's like 1 in 30 have an active virus for Mac or some kind of Trojan, and then it's like 1 in 10 actually have something that would affect a Windows machine on it. It's not affecting the Mac stuff, if they connect to a Windows machine, it's out.
Wow.
So gone are the days when, you could just say, huh, iron OS 10.
I'm virus-free.
Viruses for the Mac?
Yeah. Mostly Trojans and stuff. It's not, quite as nasty as the Windows viruses, but they are out there.
No, my Windows computer isn't special anymore. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
We have another call in the queue?
Yes, we do.
All right.
All right.
What? When?
All right. Up next, it's going to be Amber.
Amber, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Howdy. I'm looking to you guys to help me cut through some BS.
Okay.
So I have a laptop. It's an HP DV5-2035DX. And I need a new battery because currently it only works when it's plugged in. So that's not very useful as an actual laptop. So some places I read say things like, oh, you have to get the manufacturing battery or it might catch on fire. There are all these like Sony ones out there. And other folks say, go ahead and get the third party. It's going to be cheaper and it's usually made out of the same stuff anyhow. So I was going to get you guys a read on that.
Your battery probably will not catch on fire unless you buy like a super cheap,
eBay special.
Right.
In general,
if I'm buying from Amazon in the $30 range, I'm probably all right.
You may be all right. I tend to go to be cautious with that and get the manufacturer or at least a brand name, a name that I've heard of. Or you can obviously take the brand and Google it and see what other people say, and that's right. Probably wise. But If it's a $100 battery and you're seeing it for $30, that may be a little low. I would look.
I have not heard of that many batteries catching on fire, except for the ones that were actually produced by Dell for their laptops. It was the vendor's battery that was catching on fire.
What I've seen, I see people complain in forums about cheap batteries swelling, not going a year and then not being able to hold a charge. I mean, you're more apt to have problems like that.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I'm looking at, maybe another year on this machine anyhow before I'm looking at a new machine.
So, well, if that's the case,
yeah. It's also the question of, okay, if it's going to be a $100 battery, at this point, do I just invest in a new machine?
That is a good point.
I'd just say wire some 9 volts together and see what happens.
Some chicken wire.
Spend a little money. Throw a little money at it.
I know there's good deals on aftermarket batteries for computers of a certain age. So you're talking about a 2 or 3 year old PC or laptop.
Yep, it's and, a 2 year old laptop.
Finding an aftermarket battery for about $30 tends to be about right. And if you're thinking about replacing the thing anyway, down the road, I mean, you could probably get a little bit more life for the $30.
Right. That's kind of what I'm looking at as a cost benefit analysis. Pay $30 and kind of cross my fingers, and then, and knowing a year down the line, I'm getting a new laptop altogether.
Yeah. And I think that's reasonable.
Excellent. I very much appreciate the advice. I knew you guys would give it to me straight.
We'll always tell you something. Thanks for your call, Amber.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. So, two calls. That's awesome.
This data that I was talking about was from yesterday, April 24th. Sophos did it, and more or less they looked at 100,000 or so snapshots of all the Mac computers they're protecting, and 20% of Mac computers are carrying one or more instances of Windows malware, and 2.7%, which is 1 in 36 of Macs, actually have Mac OS malware. So it's growing.
Well, good. Kind of get things on an equal footing. Yeah, I'm starting to now. I used to, I get an email with a strange link, and I used to just chase it on a Mac and say, see what it is.
Well, I'm wondering if some of those numbers aren't a little bit elevated just because people are just going through life with abandon, when they're on OS 10, so maybe they're not practicing the best, computer skills. Whereas, I'm a lot more careful when I'm on a Windows machine than I am on an OS 10 machine, but maybe that'll change a little bit.
I did a column a couple of years ago the idea that with all of these people switching from Windows over to the Mac and thinking, oh, good, now I'm on a Mac, I can do what I want, not doing, you know, not practicing safe computing, basically, it makes the Mac more vulnerable once something happens. And I just, you know, you have to wonder if this isn't any of the flashback Trojan is an example of that. Because I've had people tell me, yeah, I went to a Mac and now I can just like surf porn sites and don't have to worry about it. And that's just exactly the wrong attitude.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour. When do we want to take our break? In a couple of minutes? Yeah?
Sure.
All right, well, let's take this call real quick, and then we will...
Alrighty.
Do I think that's a good idea? Yeah, all right, let's do it.
Okay, up next, we're going to take Scott.
Scott, you're on air with Technology Bites.
Well, I am shopping around for a new computer, and first of all, I'm wondering how much memory and disk space I really need.
Well, that's kind of a personal question. You have to determine that, like, in terms of... what are you going to be doing with the computer?
Yeah.
I would just say, you know, get as much memory and as hard drive space as you can afford.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. I could do with the kind of computers for my own, not counting internet. I can use the same computer I might have used 15 years ago. But I am having problems with the internet. And some sites are more trouble than others. For example, Wikipedia.
Well, a lot of these sites aren't going to necessarily have anything to do with the amount of memory or the amount of hard drive space.
Yeah, something is wrong because...
How old is the computer you're using right now, in fact, 15 years old?
No, it's about 8 years old.
When's the last time you reloaded your software?
Well, I have... let's see, I guess I reloaded the Linux about 5 years ago, and...
The problem you're having is with a computer that you've loaded Linux on 5 years ago, and you're the one that calls in with some frequency about troubles that you're having installing drivers for various devices and getting various things to work. So, okay, so you have a computer that, you know, may or may not be installed properly, so it wouldn't be surprising to learn that you're struggling to reach internet sites or have the internet work properly. When you're thinking about buying a new computer, are you going to buy a brand new computer and turn around and install Linux on that?
I think so.
All right, well, you're going to run into some challenges there because a lot of the newer hardware that you'll find on a newly bought computer may not have driver support for all of the devices to work properly in the Linux operating system.
Yeah, well, I could use Windows 7 for internet, I guess.
Yeah, it might be worth considering. Yeah. You know, if you wanted to, if you're just looking for general web browsing and using the computer to access the internet and email and so forth.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sounds to me, you know, you've called a number of times on this show and been on the program numerous times. It sounds to me like you're very interested in using Linux on your PC, but that you struggle with it a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm not really clear on what the motivation is for you to continue using this operating system. But listen, I tell you what, we could put you on hold and come back to you or you can call back in. We have to take a break here.
Yeah, I do have some more questions.
All right, we'll put them on hold, and we're going to let you know that you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Afflicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Drew Valves.
All right.
On Saturday, April 28th at 8 p.m., Voices Breaking Boundaries will kick off its spring 2012 Living Room Art production, Women Under Siege Part 1, at the home of Yolanda Alvarado and Victor King, 6669 Fairfield, Houston, Texas, 77023. This production features Houston-based artists Mary Margaret Hansen, Megan Jackson, Abijan Johnson, and Autumn Knight, along with 7 Karachi-based artists. Women Under Siege is a 2-part project that will explore women's rights, education, and security issues in Houston and Karachi. Part 2 of the production takes place on Saturday, May 12th at 8 p.m. also. For more information, go to VBBARTS or call 713-524-7821. As always, the production is co-sponsored by KPFT Houston and other organizations.
KPFT is supported in part by Americans United for Separation of Church and State, a nonpartisan, nonprofit educational organization dedicated to preserving the constitutional principle of church-state separation as the only way to ensure religious freedom for all Americans. Go to auhouston.org or email americansunited.houstonchapter@gmail.com for more information.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway... Take it away, Barrett.
All right. We've been talking about Arduino for quite a while now. If you've been to a geek gathering at some point during the last 2 years, you've probably glimpsed one without knowing. The Arduino is a microcontroller, or a tiny computer that's capable of reacting to the real world in physical ways. Using a microcontroller, you can take various inputs, things like light, heat, motion, or distance, make a decision as to how to react to them, then actually cause something in the real world to happen. Motor turns, a sound plays, or, most likely, a light blinks. In the past, you had to visit a few specific sites on the internet to get things like these to play with, but all that's changing. Micro Center, an early adopter and an abandoner of Linux software, is now carrying Arduinos, Arduino clones, and a ton of stuff to hook them up to. The problem is that there isn't a ton of information accompanying the items, and your average patron is just going to cruise right by them like they're an old pile of DB9 to DB25 serial adapters. Micro Center is hoping to change all this by offering an Arduino workshop this Saturday at the Houston store at 610 near San Felipe. Things get started at 2 p.m. this Saturday, April 28th. Pre-registration in the store is required as seating is limited, and participants must bring the following: an Arduino starter kit or Arduino model with components needed in class, and a notebook computer with OS 10 or Windows. It looks like they're choosing not to support Linux. The following will be provided: informational handouts and project details, a CD containing the Arduino IDE for Mac and Windows, Arduino sketch files used in the workshop, code samples from Spark Fun Inventor's Guide, code samples from O'Reilly's Getting Started with Arduino, as well as the Arduino cookbook. Not to be left out, the Houston Area Apple Users Group, a.k.a. HOG, is putting on their own microcontroller presentation the morning after the Geek Gathering. Actually, I'm sorry, that's actually this coming week, not the morning after the Geek Gathering. They've also picked Saturday the 28th to give their talk on microcontrollers. And while not a hands-on workshop, I'm sure there's some information to be gleaned there. Since the special interest group meeting start at 9 a.m., with the main microcontroller presentation happening at 11, you could conceivably take in both events, transforming you into a microprogramming machine. Hit www.microcenter.com and www.haaug.org for details and directions. I'll also have both links on the Geek Radio website before the show wraps. And if you can't make either one of these, I will be sure to bring out some Arduino to the next Geek Gathering in May. That's it for your microcontroller micro revolution. That's that for Barrett time.
All right. And we'll go back to the phones where Scott is on hold and see what the heck he's doing with his Linux. You want to bring that back for us, Groovehouse?
Okay. Well, right. About a year ago, Wikipedia started crashing the browser that came with Linux 9.0. Now, I solved that problem by downloading a newer Firefox and installing it on Windows 2000. And still would like to know why. Also, there are different problems with Daily Cuss. It hangs up on both browsers, and in particular, it often hangs up my keyboard input.
I'm going to vote for faulty install of your operating system.
Also, just old tech. A lot of the new stuff that's being pushed on web browsers, and maybe Wikipedia isn't the same, but as, you know, with Windows 2000 and with probably the version of Linux you're running, it's going to do things that those browsers weren't necessarily meant to do. And when you get into that territory, stuff can crash, and the browsers connect kind of funny.
Maybe the
best thing to do is to upgrade, you know, to a much more modern computer and get something like maybe Ubuntu or, you know, one of the new versions like that of Linux, and go ahead and get Windows 8, and that way, you know, you've got two OSs that are designed to work with most of the stuff you're going to find out there.
Right.
Okay. Now, what has happened to those websites that What has changed about those websites?
Well, the web moves on. Web designers do more rich content. They have videos. They've got really cool stuff that they think people will like, and they expect you to kind of keep your operating system current and keep your browser
right.
Current.
I mean, if you were to take a computer from 1995 and try to browse the web with it today, everything would break. I mean, nothing would look right in Netscape 4.
Okay.
Nothing would look good in
Craigslist,
internet.
Craigslist, Mike.
This
Craigslist,
is more like 2005.
Well, it's still kind of old.
And I don't see any extra benefits when I look at these websites.
You might see a benefit if you updated your operating system in your browser and the websites would stop crashing on you.
Or that just might run links, you know. Yeah. LYNX from the command line. You don't really need anything else.
That doesn't crash at all. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We're not sure if we are hitting the airwaves yet or not. There was some rumor that we might be back to transmitting at the top in the second hour, which we are in now, but who knows?
There's no way to really tell.
Unless somebody called in and said, I can hear you.
That'd be awesome. Outside and go out into the lobby and turn on the radio.
Say, if they come in and say, hey, we're back on the air.
That'd be nice.
Yep.
All right, so apparently we got a couple, or at least a call in the queue, but if you want to be on the air with us, 713-526-5738. Groove House?
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up next, we're going to take AC.
AC, you're on the air.
Yeah, my question has to do with Mac Pros. I've got a pair of them. They're brand new. They're working fine. They have each of them has two Ethernet connections. Can you discuss how to take advantage of two Ethernet connections?
Oh, so you have two what? MacBook Pros or what?
No, like Mac Pros.
Two Mac Pro
servers running Lion.
Ah, okay. So you have two Ethernets on each one of them?
Yeah, and one of them is obviously going to be for the local.
You're really breaking up. Are you like on an IP phone or something?
I'm on an Apple iPhone.
iPhone.
I'll go stand in the middle of the street.
What do you want to do? You want to do routing, or you just want to get like twice the throughput from those two Ethernet connections?
I want to get a lot of extra throughput on one set because these two are servers. One's a master, one's a replica, vice versa.
And you're serving just stuff in the house there?
Pardon?
You're just serving up files in the house?
Yeah.
And you can get in some kind of fancy channel bonding where you tie 2 gigabit Ethernet ports into one, but honestly, I don't think you're going to be moving anything in the house that anyone's going to see that unless everyone has Gig E and they all download, you know, a 2 gig file all at the same time. You're not really going to be able to take advantage of that kind of speed. So I think it might be more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, okay.
Honestly, because then you've got to have something on the other end that can take, you know, those two connections. So really the only benefit that you would gain is if you've got two servers, they could talk to each other very quickly.
That's the point. That's what I'll have.
Have you used Gig E Ethernet before to move files back and forth between two servers? It's pretty fast.
Okay.
It's really fast. And I believe you're going to be getting like full duplex, so you can actually move one file one way and move the other file the other way at the same time. So if that's not enough for you, then you know, call back and maybe we can show you how to do that. But I really think Gig E is going to be fast enough for whatever you're doing.
Okay. Well, in that case, let me ask an extension to that question. What about FireWire 800 versus gigabit, these attached hard drives for backup?
Well, I don't think I... Usually, like, when you have a hard drive that attaches to gigabit Ethernet, it's going to be like a storage area network kind of solution.
Yeah.
Those are several thousands of dollars, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I would assume those would be expensive. Does anyone know the speed of FireWire 800? Is it, like...
It's super fast.
Super fast.
Yeah.
I think it's 800.
Is it 800? So Gig E would be faster. I didn't know if it was that obvious. It's 800 megabits
800.
Per second.
It is that obvious.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So Gig E would be faster than that, but it's probably going to be a lot more expensive. I think FireWire is cheaper.
Yeah,
it's cheaper.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Bye. Bye.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us. Right now, Groove House is screening a call to be placed on the air.
And I'm never going to dog anyone for wanting to have, like, the best, you know, the best consumer gear at home. But really, you know, having enterprise-level gear at home, there's not much of a need. I mean, a lot of small businesses don't even really need enterprise gear.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about exceeding the capabilities of most small businesses for your home, so that you, I mean, the bottleneck remains... For most of us, to your connection to the internet. So, if you're doing a lot of large file transfers inside the house from one computer to the other, it might make some sense, but I don't know. It, you know, if you're thinking it's going to speed up your access to the internet, you need to be sure you're not under that illusion.
Was he talking about two servers that he wanted to
communicate with? He has two different servers. Each server had two Ethernet cards. I'm guessing they're probably gig-y, so he was looking at maybe doing channel bonding to where he could do throughput over both of them, but then they can't be connected to anything else, and, you know, it's just... I don't know why he'd want to do that necessarily.
What was his purpose in doing that?
So he could transfer files back and forth between them at a very quick rate.
Between the two servers?
Between the two servers.
Yeah, I don't see much benefit.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on the amount of traffic that those servers are seeing, he could set up a crossover cable or a private network connection between the second pair of NICs and do all of his data transfer.
Yeah, that's
server
you should
server
do direct over that.
Between those two, and that takes some load off the other, you know, that provides a fatter pipe between those two. But
you don't need 2 gigabit Ethernet speeds between two servers that are right next door to each other.
You should go 10 gig. That's what you should do. Get a 10 gig card between the servers. Because, you know, a 10 gig cable at this point can only be like a foot long or something, copper 10 gig. Or go fiber. Get some fiber cards.
Call back, yeah. Look, you can spend all your money.
All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next we're going to take Paul.
Paul, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for getting my call. Last time I waited 45 minutes. Thanks for so fast this time. Okay, basically my call is, I was calling because I tried Zero Show, for my firewall, and I tried to make it. I was able to install it and run it, but, you know, configuring it was really tough. I mean, you know, maybe because I'm not the best one on networking, but I'm currently trying pfSense, and I wanted to hear what do you think about this difference between the two, or what do you like for a firewall.
Did you say Zero Shell?
Zero Shell, okay. Yeah. It's a router, okay. Bridge, Linux firewall. Is this for your home or is this for your office?
For office, yeah.
Well, firewalls are a little bit beyond my capabilities. There's reasons why people get paid really good money to set up, configure, and maintain firewalls. It requires a pretty in-depth knowledge of how routing occurs, and it requires a lot of insight into what it is you're trying to prevent coming into your network. So I'm afraid that you've called the wrong show for firewall support.
Well, or else our firewall
is that good.
Well, I just was wondering, what do you...
I'll tell you what my company uses. My company uses Cisco PIX firewalls. And we have a guy who is certified Cisco nine ways to Sunday to be able to get on those routers and make sure that all of our networks, all of our VLANs and so forth, are talking to the networks they're supposed to talk to and blocking the networks they're supposed to block and packet shaping and all that good stuff that these network guys do.
You can get pretty crazy rule sets on firewalls, especially if you've got a lot of subnets that you're dealing with that you want to control communication between each other.
Now, how big is your network?
Well, I have around 600 nodes.
600?
You, at that point, I mean, we run Zero Shell for our developers at work, and we run it on like a Socris Net 5501, so it's like a dedicated AMD kind of appliance. We have 12 or 15 developers, and I wouldn't put many more than that in there. Then they're checking out code. That's all they do through it. If you've got 600 users, you probably need to do kind of what Jay said and maybe look at like some Cisco PIX or look at some SonicWall or look at something that's going to be a little bit more robust, because I'm not too sure how Zero Shell is going to...
60
users. 60?
Oh, I heard 600.
I heard 600, too.
60 is a little bit more doable. Have you done like any kind of baselining to see?
What are we talking about? 60 node network. Are you running anything like a mail server or file shares? Or
I'm not running nothing like that. It's just
so you have 60 computers connecting to the internet.
about 60 workstations connected to a server, and the server has 600 nodes or cores.
Oh, the server, oh, 600 cores? Okay.
600 cores?
Well, here's what I would do. I mean, if you've got, I would go grab some, either, I don't know what you're going to build it on, but go actually download Zero Shell. Go get pfSense. I know Zero Shell's free. I believe pfSense is free. Build them both out. Play around with them for a little while, because these are both products. You can't just hop in and click, 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 you're done. You're going to have to experiment with them a little bit. And maybe the best way to do it is just actually go get both of them and go play around with them a little bit.
And one last question. Have you heard about Monitor.us? Monitor.us, US. It's like Ganglia. I don't know if you are familiar.
I'm not familiar with,
that. With
any of what you're talking about right
so
now.
So it's MITRE OS? No.
Network monitoring.
Oh, network monitoring?
How do you spell the first word?
Monitor. The website is monitor.us.
Monitor.us. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and there's a similar free version which is called Ganglia, and I don't know if there's another one that you know it has those capabilities. The good thing about Monitor US is that you can run it on your phone. I mean, you can check it from your phone.
No, it looks like a service. I mean, that definitely is there if you're going open source and you're doing stuff with, you know, if you're going to look at pfSense, you're going to look at, you know, MonoWall and Zero Shell and things like that. You also might want to look at Nagios. Which is also kind of, it does everything from heartbeat, to server statistics, even it'll look at database loads. It'll tell you, like, you know, how many of your 600 cores are running what, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't have any experience with monitor.us. I'm always a little bit touchy when it comes to letting other entities touch my production data or get into my production servers. And that's probably what you have to do.
That's why I like Ganglia, because it's in the house.
Yeah, I've never ran Ganglia, but if you've edited the same thing with any of these packages, I would download them, install them, play around with them in-house, do it in a sandboxed environment, and actually get your hands dirty messing with these, then you'll answer a lot of the questions on your own.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, good luck. Thanks. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. What are you guys talking about? I want to be included.
We're talking about music that we love.
Ooh, what do you guys love?
All right, Groove House.
Yes.
What music do you love?
Oh. No.
No, you have to do what you hate.
Oh, sorry. What do you hate? With you.
I don't know. I have to think about it. I mean, I'm not real big on country and, like, you know, new country or whatever the. All that
like pop
stuff.
Country or
pop country and whatever. I don't listen to.
I didn't like a lot of country and western from the 70s, like that kind of
really
glitzy kind of stuff. A lot of it now, the real stuff I kind of like, but like stuff like the Oak Ridge Boys and
Alabama.
I mean, I know all those songs. It's one of those things, like, I know all those songs my parents listen to it, but I don't, that's not the kind of country music
really
I care
to
for.
That stuff, but I like it okay. But yeah, but you know, also out of the 70s, there's a lot of other stuff. I mean, there's a lot of like trucking, you know, guys that came out of the 70s and.
It's a little bit different, though. That's not that, you know, the rhinestone-y kind of glittery kind of.
Like,
that's getting close to disco country. With the
people that
were
going
cowboy.
Through the 70s, because you've got, like, you know, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Johnny Paycheck.
I would consider them older school kind of country musicians. So not necessarily country western. That's more country.
Tell us what you hate, Jay.
Patriotic music.
Like John Philip Sousa?
No, like, I'm proud of the American, like, you know.
Oh, that's a lot of pop country now.
Pop country, yeah.
Loving American apple pie and your girlfriend and...
So that'd be like some Garth Brooks stuff? Because I don't like them either.
You don't kill commies anymore, now you kill...
Terrorists.
Yeah, terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Democrats. No, okay.
They're terrorists too, allegedly. All right, 713-526-5738. We lost our opportunity to take a call because now Groove House
is screening another
call. So we're actually getting some calls, which is nice. We're glad to have that happen because the show runs on calls.
Runs on you.
Runs on
so
you.
So to speak.
Could run over you.
Technology Bites is made of people.
We're trying to transition over to the tiers of Windows 8 users. maybe by next show.
We're going to be getting a lot of, I installed Windows 8.
When do you think we're going to see the first, you buy a new computer, it has Windows 8 on it?
October.
That's not too far away, considering, I mean.
June for a release candidate.
So is 7 going to stick around for quite a while, though, you think?
Yes.
I'm just looking forward to the, you know, when my users for my employer
buy their new Windows 8 computers and they don't run whatever programs they were running before.
We're still off the air, by the way.
Oh, that's good.
No, so, but yeah. We're getting a decent number of calls. Off
yeah.
The
yeah, we're getting that's a good. Lot from online.
So. Cool. Thanks for listening to the stream, everybody. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Frank.
Frank, you're on the air with Technology Bytes, or you're on the stream with Technology Bytes.
On the stream, yeah. Well, thanks a lot, guys, for continuing the show. I didn't realize you were off the air, but because I listen to you guys on the stream. All the packets and networking, hopefully I'll have a simpler one for you here.
Okay.
This is more application-based. Let's see. First of all, what am I running? It's a Mac, a Mac Mini. Server, but it's just as a Mac, and I have VMware, and I have Windows 7 inside the VMware. A question came up while I was waiting for you that I didn't have originally about viruses. I'm running a virus program on the Windows 7 inside the VMware. But I don't have any kind of antivirus. I didn't think you needed it on the Mac. Any kind of words on does say there's something that some Trojan gets on the Windows 7? Does it kind of leak over through the VMware? I thought not.
No.
Okay, good. Well, I can sleep well tonight on that one.
Although, if you are running a VMware of Windows that is infected with viruses, it can cause problems. I mean, depending on what you're using your VMware for, if you have an infected VMware and your VMware's version of Windows has personal data on it or cached passwords to websites, that data is at risk.
Hmm.
So I don't know how you use VMware. I know Dwight pretty much uses it to play with the operating system, but he still does all of his applications, you know, like probably banking and stuff on the Mac side.
That is what I do.
One of the benefits to using a VM is that if it gets corrupted or it's a problem with the virus, presuming you keep a good, decent copy, up-to-date copy of your virtual machine, you can just throw away the virtual machine and drop the copy in and keep going.
Yep, that happened to me once, and yes, thank God for backup copies. So I just had to kind of rebuild a few things, but it just came back.
It worked. Make a copy of it regularly, and if you get infected with a virus and if it seems pretty pernicious, just delete it and drop in your copy.
Now, in a VMware, like if you're running a VM of Windows 7 on your Mac, I know there are viruses in the Windows world that will jump from one computer to another over a network. When you're running a VM, is the VM considered to be networked to the host machine in a way?
Yes.
So, unfortunately, Windows viruses don't translate to the Mac very well. So, if it's designed to run on Windows or exploit Windows, it's not going to exploit your Mac. But that's changing. That landscape's starting to change a little bit. Barrett was mentioning some viruses, Windows-based viruses that are found on Macs that they probably aren't causing the Mac any problem, but they're there.
It's like male pattern baldness.
So, for example,
recessive virus.
You could transfer it from your Mac over to another Windows machine with, say, a USB stick, for example. So, because it's designed to jump from drive to drive, but it may not actually execute on the Mac.
But as long as you're running the antivirus and keeping your Windows VMware, you know, protected, you should be okay.
Okay, good. Well, yeah, fine. Thanks a lot, guys. That was that'd be chapter 3 then on the book, huh? Guys went all the way around. Okay, now the question I originally wanted to ask about is on the Mac side, Safari and Firefox, when I try to print certain pages, when the pop-up window comes up, it seems like it doesn't want to print. I do something or other. I can't describe how I do it, but I have Adobe Acrobat also on the Mac, the latest version, and I try to use that to print to or save as, depending on which what we're doing there. and okay, it looks good on the screen, you know, the little mini icon that pops up, this is what's going to print. Then I print, and damn, it turns out the text looks like Greek. It never quite prints. So I have to print to the printer, and it prints fine. And then I scan it into PDF with a scanner.
So you're saying
which is kind of silly.
You print to a PDF, and the PDF is coming out looking like Greek?
Yes.
What print to PDF program are you using?
It's Adobe Acrobat.
Okay, it is Adobe Acrobat.
Yeah, and that's a silly thing. You'd think that would never mess up. And
Does Adobe Acrobat
had run into that before, or is it just some
Frank,
kind
let
of...
me get a word in edgewise. Hang on a second. So when you I don't use Adobe Acrobat myself, but I know, does it actually print to the PDF, or does it save as a PDF?
Yeah, exactly.
That was an either or question. You can't answer yes to that.
an A or B question. All right.
So let me ask the question again. In Adobe Acrobat, when you are creating a PDF and you want to save that or create that PDF, do you use the print option to print out to a PDF, or do you use the save as and save as a PDF?
On the pages where I have difficulty, I have to save as.
Okay, so you're trying to convert websites into PDFs?
Yes, because and that's where I'm trying to print just one page of a website rather than the full, you know, 23 pages that seem to want to print. So in the end, I just print it to a printer, and it prints fine. It, you know, everything looks good as it should. And then I scan the one page to the PDF. And that's silly, I think.
If you save it as a PDF and then you open that PDF file, does it look okay? Or does it look like the gobbledygook that gets printed to the printer?
I'm sorry. Hold on. When it gets printed to the printer,
it always looks good.
It prints fine. It's when I save it as a PDF and then I try, and then I look at it, you know, it opens. I don't even print it because all the text is Greek looking.
You say that you're trying to do this in Acrobat itself?
No, he's got Adobe Acrobat, which has a connector into like Internet Explorer, which allows you
to. And this is on the Windows side.
No, this is on the Mac. It's Safari, and also the same issue happens with Firefox.
All right, so you're not using Acrobat; you're using the built-in PDF printer in OS X.
That might be there might be a conflict there. Yeah, you're kind of helping me decide what I need to look at now. Yeah, that could be it. That could be that it's conflicting. Yes, sir.
Open it in Preview instead of using Acrobat. And then try doing the save as PDF.
Well, actually, in the Mac OS is print. You choose print, and then you choose the PDF option.
And you can also do an export. And in Lion, you can do an export, and you can export it as PDF.
That's what I've tried, and that's when that's another option. You're reminding me that I've done that also. And when I do that, export to PDF, then it opens up.
Well, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, I'm looking at Safari, and I'm looking at a web page, and I click on File, and I have an option. I select Print, and one of the options I have is Print to a PDF. Save as a PDF. It's actually kind of spools it out as a PDF, and if I do that, it looks just fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's on Safari. Now, you go to, let's see, File on Firefox.
Uh-huh.
You go to Print. And sure enough, well, you know, guys, never mind. It seems to be that certain. Oh, okay. The actual web page itself, you know, the main one when you're in a web page, it's apparently the problem pops up when it is one of those pop-up windows the online banking where you want to save. That's what it is. I want to save the statement from the online banking.
I would still do that from the print option.
Yeah.
Usually when they get something like that comes up, they have a link on the page even that says print.
You'd think it would. On some of them it does, and some of them it doesn't. You know what I'm thinking? It could be that that particular bank doesn't have didn't program Firefox into it or
well, you know, there's a lot to be said about the fact that not all websites are created equal,
yeah.
And they don't always render the same way in all browsers. So, yes, they may not be as Firefox aware. They all tend to be geared towards Internet Explorer.
Ah.
So, unfortunately, you know, it takes a very enlightened company to make their website, you know, fully functional for alternate browsers such as Firefox, Safari, and so forth.
Right, right. Well, anyway, hey, listen, you guys have much more important questions being asked, I'm sure. I want to tell you, I really appreciate everything and your insight into a lot of stuff and the way you handle all the callers that call in, including the dumb ones like me. Thanks a lot.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for your call tonight.
Bye.
All right. Thought we'd never get rid of him. Just kidding.
We also tricked him because he said there's much more important callers, and look at the call that's waiting now.
Oh, my God. Is anybody else going to call in? 713-526-5738 is the number to call. I got to get, you know, we could take this next call because usually he just tweets questions at whoever.
All right, up next, we're going to take Kojo.
Kojo!
Hello.
Hello, Kojo.
How you guys doing?
Kojo, before you start, Google it, okay?
Well, I did. I couldn't come up with anything interesting. That's,
okay.
That's why I'm calling you guys.
All right.
All right, we're better at Google than you are.
That, well, we'll see. All right, so here's the thing. I've got it. So now you have to live up to your talk. Now that's the trick.
Okay.
All right, so I've got an old printer. I've got an old HP LaserJet 4MP that I bought in 1993, and I think it still works. But
Kojo's the new Ernie.
And I'm trying to install Linux on it. Linux. I'm not sure why it's not upgrading. I've got the Phoenix web browser at 0.9.
Try removing the paper tray.
I'm going to try to
change.
Do you have the large paper tray? Or
But I've got this printer, and it's got a parallel cable. But that's it. So I've got a MacBook Pro. So I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to get this old parallel cable-only printer printing with the newer machine. Do I want to just try to find like a parallel USB adapter?
I think it would actually work. I think there's probably a Mac driver for that. You're going to have to get an adapter that converts the parallel to USB.
I definitely use USB to serial, because I use that to get to serial consoles on servers and stuff. Sometimes.
Another option might be to pick up a wireless print server that has a parallel port on it.
Actually, you know what? I actually have a couple of old Centronics print servers that actually they plug into the old like Centronics, like 50-pin Centronics.
Oh, yeah.
And then have Ethernet on the other side, and you put them on the network with their own IP, and then they basically.
Oh, yeah. That's
nice.
I've got a couple of those.
That's a good idea.
But his isn't Centronics, his is parallel.
Right.
Yeah. Oh.
But so then you have to get a parallel to Centronics.
Koji, either that or there's also, I'm seeing a lot of like parallel to Ethernet stuff for like 30 or 40 bucks. All over. Okay. That may be another way to do it too.
And then if I do parallel to Ethernet, because I've got a couple of extra access points floating around, so if I did that, I could do parallel to Ethernet and then wire it into an access point, and then that would put it on my wireless network, and I could get it that way.
Or you could get an HP JetDirect card for it, and then it would just go on the network.
But, I mean, what's that going to run me for a 20-year-old printer?
I don't know how much those JetDirect cards
I don't even know if the 4MPs could take JetDirect.
Exactly.
And if you want to save 10 bucks, you can also get a lot of, there are some parallel printer ports to USB for like 19 and 20 bucks.
Okay.
Out there as well for OS 10 with OS 10 drivers.
Okay.
I would go remote. I would like convert it into a network print server.
I think you should build an Arduino device.
But see, I was going to go to that whole Arduino Saturday.
You don't want something that's faster than your printer, though, so. You go really old school and just get some scribes to hand copy everything. That's,
exactly.
That's the next step back.
They could use the printer as like a desk.
Mimeograph machine.
There you go.
Apparently, the HP JetDirect print server will work with that one. It says, printing to an AppleTalk printer with Mac OS X Snow Leopard. Wow. It's all on the internet. But yeah, JetDirect 300X would probably do the trick for you.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
And I'll see you guys next Friday.
Some of us.
All righty.
All right. All right. All right. Thanks. Kind of keep the dead air from happening.
That's lame that he's on like a laser jet printer like that, because he's not going to be able to make banners. No more banners.
There's programs that will print banners that you tape the pieces of paper.
Yeah, but you got to tape it. You know, you don't have that load, you know, the form feed paper.
Yeah, anymore. But you get that. Yeah, but everybody's doing that on perforated paper anyway, and ended up tearing it and having to tape it anyway. So you might as well just tape from the get-go. All right. Well, if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we got about 20 minutes left in the show, 25 minutes left in the show. And we are entertaining anyone who is listening right now via the stream. We're broadcasting to the interweb, but not over the air here in Houston tonight on Wednesday night. But we are streaming, so if you're tuned in there and you have a question, call us at 713-526-5738.
Did Groovehouse say what kind of music he hates?
Some country.
Some country.
That's really, I mean, unless you want to get specific ethnic music or something.
If there's a band he really, really wants to shoot, but he doesn't get an opportunity to shoot them.
You don't like ethnic music?
Did you say you hated certain ethnicities?
I don't know.
No, that's not what he said. He self-loathes. If he is a musician.
So what kind of ethnic music?
I don't know. I'm thinking...
reggae.
Oh, hey, wait.
Hey, no, wait.
I don't know.
Goa.
Maybe Goa.
Psytrance?
No, I don't know. I mean...
whatever the music is that the Whirling Dervishes dance to.
Yeah.
That crap.
Anything with a lot of bouzouki.
What about balalaikas? You like balalaika music, Flicted?
Tuvan throat singing? You into any of that stuff?
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like... there's very little music I don't like.
You know, I don't have time to actively hate stuff.
Yeah, really.
What about Banda?
Isn't that the stuff you use to fix the dents in your car?
Banda's like... It's like Latin polka. It's 3-4 beat tubas, but Latin.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard it.
Hmm.
What about norteños?
Narco corridos?
Because I like norteños. It's, you know, it's a lot of accordion.
Yeah. I don't know.
Kind of polka dancey.
I don't actually hate it.
It only sounds good if it's played on speakers that have been blown out.
And having drunk lots of beer.
All right. 713-526-573.
Who's your favorite norteños guy?
I don't know.
Ramon Ayala y sus bravos del norte.
That's a good one.
Isn't that kind of folk music?
No.
No. Tony's saying.
It's ethnic.
Ethnic folk.
I mean,
it's kind of a folk music.
I mean,
music.
You could say folk as much as like polka's folk.
You're talking about acoustic, you know, when Peter Paul and Mary folk.
Yeah, when I say folk, I mean like American 60s pop folk music.
What about 40s folk music and 50s folk music? Like, you know, before the whole peace, love, and stuff. Like
Appalachian. Like Appalachian, like the Carter family?
Maybe, or maybe some of the early, Woody Guthrie type stuff. Arlo. You know, this is my country, you know.
It's okay.
The early American stuff.
I'm not a huge fan of it, but I don't hate it.
What about, songs like John Henry was
a
pilot?
Swing. I like, you know, like Glenn Miller.
Do you like the folk music about the folk heroes, like Paul Bunyan and John Henry?
Of that stuff's okay.
Steel Driving Man.
That's okay, yeah.
How about She Shanties? Sea Shanties.
Now, wait a
love
second.
The sea shanties.
No, not so much.
That's about work, and he doesn't much care for that either. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the Music Hour, we're going to take Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey guys, interesting the printer problem. I had the same thing with the LaserJet 4000, and the USB to parallel works fine, so I think he's not going to have a problem with that.
Did you get an Andre 3000 adapter?
I guess so, yeah, but it did not handle the 200-pound 3D printer test. So.
everybody has silence.
Yeah.
I did have a question about network speeds, though. I am not a network ace, and I just have everything plugged into a router in my house. But what sort of speeds should you expect to have in a home network? Because I'm moving, like, 10 gig files, and I'm wondering how long that should take.
What's your speed? What are you... Is it wireless?
It is not wireless. It is wired.
Okay, so you got...
How old is the router that you... Or the
year old.
You're going into?
Year old?
So it's probably at
so it's probably a gigabit.
100, maybe gig.
Cat 5, but I don't think I sprung for Cat 6 or anything. So.
Did you like...
No, it was not the cable so much, but is the router itself. It's, you know... Your network's going to be as fast as the slowest point that anything talks to each other. So that's usually the router. Like if
did you hand crimp all the cables? Because that could be a problem.
if you have a hundred megabit router and you have 2 gigabit Ethernets, then they're only going to talk to each other at 100 megabits.
Everything on the network has to be gigabit Ethernet to get those kind of speeds.
Well, honestly, I have no idea. It's all it's a wireless in. Router that I have everything.
But you're
wired.
Not doing it wireless, you said.
But I'm not doing wireless. I have everything wired. In the
if it's a wireless end router, it's probably gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah, did you buy it new? No.
Did I buy it new? Yes, I bought it new.
How old is it? Probably gigabit.
What's the model number on it? Do you know that?
I have no idea.
No idea? So yeah,
My guess would be it's gigabit. It's possible that your cables might not be able to handle gigabit, depending on how old they are, because... the specs for 5 don't guarantee gigabit throughput because there was 5E, which I think actually originally only guaranteed 350 meg, guaranteed it. But a lot of them could do gig, but I think it only guaranteed 350. Cat 6 guaranteed gig, I think. So
you may actually be...
possible your cables might not be able to handle gigabit Ethernet.
You can always go and actually, like, if you're on a Windows computer, you go look at the connection. It'll tell you if you're connected at, 100 megabits per second or 1,000. Same thing on Windows. Same thing on Mac. If you type in ifconfig, it'll tell you your connection speed.
So it's taking about, let's say, 7 to 8 minutes to move a 10 gig file. Is that...
You're probably on gig-y.
Okay.
Because otherwise that would be 100 minutes. That would be an hour or two. You'd probably be waiting for that much. Yeah, you're on gig-y.
It still seems like it takes forever. I wish I could get something faster.
There's 10 gig-y, but that's pretty expensive, and your wires aren't going to be very long. It's mainly for like server interconnects and stuff like that right now.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the answer, and thanks much.
All right, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I have a gigabit Ethernet network, and it takes about that long to do those kinds. It's kind of frustrating because you think, ooh, gigabit Ethernet.
Until you do it on 100 base T, and it really does take a couple hours. So, I mean, think your lucky stars on the gig-y side.
Yes. But I had to work at it. I had to, like, replace a whole bunch of things, and I had a nice hub, and I had to get rid of, a nice switch. I had to get rid of the switch because it was not...
They've gotten inexpensive now, but, I mean, back in the day, 10 years ago, we were spending, for a home one, for, like, a 4-port would be $400, to have gig-y at the house.
Right.
So it's worthwhile now, I think.
Yeah.
And we never had anything. We had never even had a file that was larger than, like, 3 seconds worth of transfer, back then.
And actually, as fast as the current wireless router I have now, unless I'm moving a really big file, I kind of don't notice the difference, Uh-oh.
Hello?
Somebody answer that.
I'm back.
Interesting. All right, Groovehouse, what was that call you were taking?
Oh, in case you didn't know, we're off the air.
Oh, okay.
No way.
Yeah, we're still down.
That radio for nothing. All right, well, we have exhausted all the calls that we have in our queue.
Ernesto has exhausted some credibility.
Yeah.
He said maybe.
It was a maybe. It was a big maybe.
Nothing was in stone.
He's climbing the tower and cranking the wrench.
That'd be pretty cool.
Would it?
He would not think so.
I don't know. Maybe he would.
He doesn't strike me as a tower climber.
Daredevil.
He doesn't strike me as a tower climber.
So you took a moment, thought about Ernesto with a utility belt.
Hard hat.
Hard hat. Wrench in hand. Going up those...
And just, while you were curious, it did not quite get you to the point of credibility.
Okay. No.
Credibility.
All right.
So he's working on the antenna, and then he's working on the antenna, and then he's working on the...
For those, he just did the YMCA body language thing that people like to do when they're hearing that song at the disco.
Nice.
I don't think they did that at the disco. I don't think
that. You think it was more of a modern thing?
That happened,
more of
a skate rink thing? Very modern, yeah.
I think it came out pretty much when the song came out.
Really? I don't know.
Yeah. I think the Village People themselves did it.
They were doing it, exactly.
Yeah. Google the video of the original video of them doing it. I'll bet you they are doing it.
I didn't realize. I thought that was a more recent take on the song.
Did it was. It, the roller rink in the 80s, for sure.
I did.
Like 1980.
It's like Rock Lobster and going to the ground during Rock Lobster. It's been around like from the inception.
I like the B-52s.
Yeah, I love the B-52s. I think they're awesome. I don't hate them. All right. Well, we are winding down in the program, but we're not ready to quit yet.
Maybe just state lines from songs and see if we can like figure out who it is.
You know, that's one of the things I always found difficult was reading the lyrics to songs. And they just didn't. If you just read them as text, they're not interesting.
I don't actually listen to the lyrics of songs very much.
I can't usually understand the lyrics.
A lot of times,
I
can't understand part of them, and I kind of tune them out. Even if I can actually sing along with parts of the song, I usually don't actually know what the song's saying.
You know the chorus.
And so,
you don't know the verses.
And then somebody will be like, you know, this song's about blah, blah, blah. I have no idea. And I'll be saying the words, and then all of a sudden, the words become sentences, and then the sentences become ideas. And I was like, well, I've never realized that.
Oh, I've had songs that I've listened to all my life, and I've never paid attention to what the story was. And then one day I'll pay attention.
Yep.
It's like,
I'm totally like that.
That's weird.
Songs.
That's kind of a cool song. Or, God, that is so lame. Catchy beat.
Doors.
Yeah, I like this. All right, 713-526-5738. Yeah, I mean, my thing is I just can't understand the words to a lot of songs. You know, you can hear the chorus, and you kind of know what the chorus is, although there's a whole big funny batch of websites designed around misheard
songs. One of my favorite songs, which kind of encapsulates that, is the Weird Al Yankovic parody of Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's called Smells Like Nirvana. And at one point, he just breaks down into mumbling. And to me, that's like, hey, that is Nirvana.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like him.
Right.
All right. Wow. Is that somebody else to tell us we're off the air?
Yeah, we're down.
We're down.
Maybe it was Ernesto calling from the tower.
Send in those pledges.
Yeah. Well, you know, fundraiser's coming up in a couple of weeks.
We'll be back on the air by then.
I'm sure.
Guaranteed.
Dwight's working on a surprise for that, I hear, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how surprising it is.
It probably won't be all that surprising.
It doesn't involve nudity and body paint, does it?
Damn! You know Dwight so well.
I'm going to have to cover all the bad surprises so he can't do them because they're not a surprise.
We could do nudity, actually, on the show.
No one
would know.
We'd know. And it would affect our...
Would you?
I can't try.
I don't think anybody wants to hear a lot of dry heaving on air.
You know, I
Did
mean,
you know, Jay,
how about
these
that Microsoft?
I'm weird.
Yeah, but the clothing muffles some of the flaps. You know. I don't know.
Evens things out.
Yeah. It's the great equalizer. We're all pretty when we're dressed. I was waiting for Dwight to say speak for yourself, but 713-526-5738. Thank you for tuning in on the stream. If you've tuned in, even though we're not broadcasting live out on the airwaves, Technology Bites, even when we're off the air, we're on the air. So that's the level of dedication that you'll be pledging for when the fundraiser rolls around. Right now, Groovehouse looks like he is screening a call. So we'll look forward to talking to someone here momentarily. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. Text only Instagram. What's that?
Oh, it's a very funny Twitter account that textually describes bad Instagrams. It's pretty funny.
I have to follow that myself.
Funny. That sounds funny.
female hand grasping expensive beverage. Portrait of a dandelion with a suspiciously shallow depth of field for a cell phone.
It needs to have with blue filter or with, you know, it needs to describe the color of the instrument.
Strange stage full of blue lights accented by a blurry guitarist.
I've got to follow this.
This is awesome. See, that's Dwight's so hip and cool. So we got a call at the queue, huh?
Yeah, we got one coming in.
All right, who is it? What do you want?
Up next, we're going to take Alon.
Alon, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello there.
Hello.
Yeah, you were down to 8,000 watts before the call, and I can't pick you up in the heights, but I've been listening quite well to KPFG using the iTunes streaming off the internet.
That's good.
And you can click on the web page and pick it up better there if you can't get it very well on your radio. I'm just announcing that for everyone's interest. Wanted to ask you, among the click of you guys there, are any of you web scripters? Do you create pages?
Pete does.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, that was my question, and I'll let it go at that. Any particular software you prefer, or is WordPress kind of a in the cloud kind of aware, or what?
It's not really a scripting software. That's more like a CMS kind of end user application. Web scripting is going to be like using JavaScript or Node.js or EXTJS or, you know, something along those lines. You know, whether it's a toolkit or whether it's just straight up, you know, a scripting language like, you know, client side JavaScript or server side.
Because I taught myself web scripting by looking at people's source code, and I manually created files typing out the characters one keystroke at a time, which is terribly slow.
Go to W3 Schools. So yeah. Just Google for W3 Schools, and they've got some JavaScript tutorials that bring you, that'll take you all the way from doing your first Hello World all the way to the end. And the nice thing about JavaScript is that you don't need a web server to run it. You can just write it, save it locally on your machine, you pull it up, and you've got, you know, instant gratification.
Yeah, I scripted 1995 up until 2005, and I was just getting into cascading style sheets.
CSS, yeah. Go check out node.js. That's kind of the new hotness. It's Google's V8 JavaScript compiler.
Okie doke.
All right, thanks for your call. All right. Text only, Instagram tweets. Feet.
I still think that person needs to add some color to
no,
it.
No, I don't think so.
No, feet with a blue tint.
Or no, it would be cool if
vignette and a pink tint.
It would be cool if they linked to a page that had the text Instagram, but then had details like, you know, like Hipstamatic tells you what lens and all that does.
Yeah.
So you would just get the details of the shop without the actual image.
Yeah.
Low horizon, a single pigeon mid-flight.
Awesome.
This is a great Twitter stream. It's not that. Is it new?
Yes.
It looks like it's only started. Just God, this is going to go viral or something.
Facebook will buy it for $1 billion.
That's brilliant. It's got 2,100 followers now, but yeah, he's
slowly
only got like
building. Slowly building up. Let's take this next call.
All right.
All right, we're going to take a call from Frank.
Frank, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. Yes, where does our comrade get off dissing all the music of the 60s and 70s as though, you know, anything more than a relatively limited quadruple handful of anything from the 80s was an improvement?
Funny you should use the word comrade.
Yeah, I know. I've forgotten his name even as many nights as I listen, but, you know. I mean, that's like, to diss all of it is just like, you know, defecating on Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra.
Well, I think dissing is the wrong term and probably a bit more youthful than you're used to in terms of words. But diss would be where you're actually putting down the music.
Right.
He just doesn't like it. He doesn't say that it's bad or that other people should. It's not like saying your favorite band sucks. He just says he hates it.
Although it depends on what your favorite band is.
And folk, too. You know, I think that, you know, his musical taste is not so much a taste as it is an affectation. The hint was in that he said he kind of got into Yes before he knew it better.
He might have slipped and fell into some
hard
rock.
That's back when I thought Ray Stevens was really good.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of Ray Stevens in a week. Yeah, they call him the street.
I mean, before I knew, you know, much better, before I had broadened my horizons, then Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and who else, and, you know, and Rick Wakeman were far more important than Pink Floyd. And, you know, and Dark Side of the Moon really hadn't taken hold of me at that time.
Well, you know, there was a time for you and me, Frank, when that stuff was new. It wasn't like, you know, music from the past, like we're talking about it now, but it was actually new. And you're right. The time that it came out, it was really interesting. But I think something to keep in mind is that it's not new anymore. And there's some really cool stuff happening.
Now,
so.
I used to hate Pink Floyd, but Dark Side of the Moon is a really good album.
Go ahead.
Okay, anybody that says Dark Side of the Moon is, you know, the most important album of all time, then is okay in my book.
That's not what he said.
I did say it was a really good album, though.
You know, it really sparked my interest in prisons.
Jethro Tull talking about, you know, and then...
I like Jethro Tull. He's all right.
I also developed an appreciation for the Flying Burrito Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, okay. Well, now we're there. You know, Lynyrd Skynyrd is, you know.
Well, that's kind of like Southern rock, so it doesn't qualify as rock.
So wait a minute. Georgia Satellites? You don't like the Georgia Satellites?
Well, I don't like the Georgia Satellites.
Where did that come from?
I didn't say I didn't like the Georgia Satellites. So I said that he could justify liking Lynyrd Skynyrd because it was Southern rock, not technically rock. Like, it's punk rock, like the Sex Pistols are punk rock. Lynyrd Skynyrd is Southern rock. It's the loophole, man. He's got a loophole.
I see.
If it's a hyphenated rock, he can
dig it. He can dig it.
Yeah.
See.
All right.
But
we appreciate your call, Frank. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
The great musical horizons, the variety of the mega groups, you know, as well as the important message of groups like The Who and Pink Floyd.
Well, you know what? Rock music came to an end when Journey broke up, but then it was reborn.
No. That's almost exactly what I'm talking about. The more commercial it is, then the less, you know, value it has.
It's got to innovate.
I totally agree. Except to me, all those bands of the 1670s were the commercial bands of the 60s and 70s.
Well, the problem with the bands of the all that nostalgia rock right now is that it is nothing but a commercial enterprise by companies that are preying upon nostalgia. And
hey, man, is that freedom rock?
There it is.
Well, listen, Frank, we're out of time. We got to let you go.
You can't make that much money off of it because it's available free on the net.
No, not legally. But you old hippies are going to take what you're going to take. All right. All right. Well, that was an interesting show, I got to say. And really glad that those who tuned in and participated tuned in and participated.
Flicted doesn't hate you.
You know... He does not. He will not interfere with your right to listen to whatever crap it is that you listen to. That's his philosophy, right? All right. Well, I'm going to go away for a couple of weeks. These guys will be in charge, so we'll see how that works out for you. But you have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Oh wow! You turned him off?
I don't know. I didn't know if he was connected. I didn't know he was connected to me.
Oh
no. Well. All right. I don't know.
All right. He was Peter Hughes.
Peter Hughes. Who are you?
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Stick around here locally. Vegan World Radio coming your way. If you're listening outside the Houston area, check your local listings.
KPFT has a pledge drive coming up, and we're seeking phone volunteers to help us out during this membership campaign. Phone volunteer trainings include Thursday, April 26th from 11 a.m. to noon, Saturday, April 28th from 5 to 6 p.m., And for experienced phone volunteers, there'll be a phone volunteer training session on Wednesday, April 25th from 11 a.m. to noon and 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. All trainings held at KPFT Studios, 419 Lovett Boulevard. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Angry and upset about the right-wing attacks on women's health and equality. Join thousands of other Texans as we unite against the war on women. You can log on to wowtex.org and commit to making a difference by attending the rally in Austin on April 28th. Learn how to take action today. Even become a deputized voting registrar. Women, men, children, all have a stake in this fight. That is wowtex.org. Spread the word. We're angry, we're organized, and we vote.